that go beyond P&L. Reach the zone more consistently. Become more adaptive to a rapidly changing competitive environment. Maintain interest and enthusiasm, which prevents plateaus, boredom, and burnout. To close out the chapter, you'll learn how to use a tool my clients find essential to their progress, the mental hand history. This tool helps you to develop a new perspective for problem solving and streamlines your efforts to identify the root problem and determine a correction to it. Let's kick off the chapter with some of the unexpected yet common learning flaws that undermine emotional stability and consistency in your trading. Common learning pitfalls. In the course of your lifetime, you've learned everything from how to walk and talk to the requisite training expertise, such as interpreting a variety of indicators or fundamentals. You had to learn all of it. But how often do you consider the role of learning as it relates to your mental game? If you're like most traders, not often. Yet flaws in how you've been learning are a likely contributor to emotional instability. This is a critical concept. When traders know what to truly expect of themselves, they stop fighting against what they think is true and can instead work within the reality of what's actually true. Inefficiencies in learning can be hard to spot. Take the common scenario that many traders go through at some point, transitioning from a demo account or paper trading to the live market. This is an important step that typically happens at the beginning of a career, but it can also occur for some traders when they adapt a discretionary strategy or experiment with a new system. Many traders have had the experience of being a star in a demo account, only to struggle in the live market. They can't execute with the same calmness and precision. There's hesitation, uncertainty, and overthinking that didn't exist in the simulator because those results didn't actually matter. It can be easy to misinterpret those signals as fear, when the simpler explanation is a learning error, failing to understand how to make the transition to the live market. This common error in learning happens in many performance arenas. The golfer who doesn't play as well in a tournament as in a practice round, or the new actor who kills it in rehearsals but can't deliver on stage. Like many golfers and actors, if you believe the sim and the live market are the same, there's a fundamental flaw in your understanding of performance. "I'm making the same trades, it should be no different," is a common refrain that highlights this flaw. While the trades may be the same, you are not. In the live market, your results actually matter. Your money is on the line, among other things, like your reputation, confidence, and future. That's not the case trading a simulated market. The truth is, there's a gap. And no matter how much you tell yourself to treat the sim like the live market, they're not the same and never will be. Amped up nerves are an inherent part of competing in an intense environment with a great deal on the line and where you have a lot to learn or prove. This is how the nervous system responds to such situations. And having your nerves dialed up helps you learn. Your ability to sense and perceive the environment is heightened thanks to your nervous system. You absorb more data than normal, and this helps to fuel the zone and high-level intuition. Pressure and nerves are a vital part of the transition. If, however, you believe they're inherently a problem, or that you can't handle the pressure, secondary anxiety will accumulate, and that will cause a drop in performance. The flaw here is not that you feel some pressure or nerves. It's expecting your body to respond to the learning process without them. To give you a few other examples of learning flaws, let's say you're a seasoned trader who's been trading index futures and recently started trading options. When you make what you assume to be a stupid basic mistake like sizing too large, you get extremely frustrated with yourself. You're a seasoned trader and you should know better. But really, the mistake could be evidence that your knowledge from trading futures doesn't entirely translate to options. There's still a transition to make, and you have to complete the learning process. Or perhaps you didn't realize that high levels of competence can be a buffer against underlying emotional flaws. For example, you sized too large because a series of losing trades triggered anger. This hadn't been a problem for a long time, but the newness of trading options exposed an old emotional flaw. Either way, trading a different market made a basic mistake more likely, but if interpreted the right way, the mistake can be corrected quickly. Or maybe you tend to overconsume data by trying to learn more and more without fully absorbing it. You may not realize this flaw can cause your performance to have big ups and downs. Sometimes your sense of the market is spot on, but that happens infrequently. More often, you have varying degrees of confusion, overthinking, and second-guessing your moves, There are too many ideas or angles in your head to make sense of. You get frustrated, stressed, and assume the best thing is to take a few days to clear your head. That might work in the short term, but this problem keeps resurfacing again and again. The obvious problem is the secondary frustration and stress, so you assume it's a mental game problem, but it could simply be a basic error in how you're consuming and processing information. Finally, when correcting your problems with greed, anger, fear, confidence, or discipline, you must go through a learning process. Too often, traders believe these problems have quick fixes. But just as you can't become a competent trader overnight, you need to go through a learning process to eliminate a mental game problem. When you think of correcting emotional issues as a learning process, you'll be able to recognize progress and make the necessary adjustments. If you don't take this strategic approach, your expectations are automatically out of sync with reality. Not only are you dealing with the original problem, but you also create secondary layers of anger, fear, low confidence, etc., as you attempt to correct your issues. You become angry that you haven't yet corrected your anger or lapses in discipline. You worry that your fear isn't getting better fast enough. You lose confidence that you can regain your confidence. Without understanding the learning process, you misread or ignore signs of improvement, causing you to abandon a strategy that's actually working, just not in a visible way to an untrained eye. Many of you fall in this category of having unsuccessfully tried to fix your trading problems. Understanding the learning process removes this layer of complexity and allows you to correctly identify whether your mental game strategy is working or not. In the next section, you'll learn about a concept that I created early in my career as I was thinking about how to communicate the learning process to poker players. The inchworm concept forms the foundation of an organized and logical structure for learning. For the seasoned traders out there, this theory may be obvious in practice, but many of my clients have found that it illustrates their existing efforts to improve, and this in turn helps them become more efficient at developing their expertise. The inchworm concept. The inchworm concept is literally based on the inchworm, a caterpillar that moves in a distinct way. If you've never seen the way an inchworm moves, it starts by stretching its body straight, anchoring the front feet, and then lifting up from the back end. It then bends at the middle to bring the two ends closer together, anchors the back feet, and then stretches its body straight again to take another step forward. An inchworm looks like a bell curve that moves. As it relates to trading performance, a bell curve can show the natural variation that exists in your decision-making. Think for a moment about the quality of your trading decisions over the last 6 to 12 months, or longer if you only make a small number of trading decisions per month. To illustrate a point, let's say you were able to accurately rate the quality of all of these decisions on a scale of 1 to 100, where 1 represents your worst decisions and 100 is your best, and then plotted them on a graph. What you'd see is a bell curve, showing the variation in your performance from best to worst and everything in between. This defines your current range of decision making. All the knowledge and skills that you're currently learning exist within that range. Every day you show up to trade, you're bound by your range. There's a limit to how bad your decisions can be, and there's a cap to how good your decisions can be as well. As a trader with 10 years of experience, it's no longer possible, under any circumstance, for you to think about a trade as rudimentarily as you did when you were 6 months in. From a performance standpoint, there's a proverbial stop loss limiting how bad a decision you can make. And on the flip side, when you were a trader with 6 months' experience, you couldn't wake up one day and suddenly think about a trade as well as a trader with 10 years' experience. Sure, you could execute the same trade, but the decision-making process to get there would be significantly different. The capacity to shrink 9.5 years of experience into one day doesn't exist. In Chapter 1, I talk about your A game, B game, and C game. The bell curve illustrates how each level looks on a graph, and the inchworm concept helps you see, track, and improve performance over time. The concept of inchworm comes in when you look at how improvement happens over time. A bell curve is a static snapshot of your performance over a defined period of time and shows how frequently you were trading well, at average, or poorly. Improvement is the forward movement of a bell curve over time, something an actual inchworm illustrates perfectly in the way it moves. Consistent improvement happens by taking one step forward from the front of your bell curve, where your A game becomes even better, followed by another step forward from the back, where your C game becomes less terrible. Over time, that improvement from both sides of your range moves your entire bell curve further to the right on the graph. At that point, your old C game disappears, and your stop loss for poor decision making has moved forward. It's no longer possible for you to make the trading errors or think about a trade as you did at that previous level. Your old B game becomes your new C game. Your new B game is now at the level of your old A game, and you have the opportunity to find a higher level of performance that becomes your new A game. If you focus only on front-end improvement, as many traders mistakenly do, your range gets wider. As a result, a host of problems develop, including wild swings in execution, plateauing, burnout, and the inability to maintain high levels of focus. Contrary to what many traders implicitly believe, your back end doesn't automatically move forward because the front end did. To counter this, you must consistently focus on back end improvement, especially when you reach a new peak in your ability. Some traders instinctively try to fly too close to the sun, and they push the front end as far as they can. They end up looking greedy and get burned by a big drawdown. These huge missteps can be avoided by understanding how back-end weaknesses trip you up. Instead of continuing to push higher and higher, focus on correcting your current greatest weaknesses, consistently. That moves the back end of your bell curve forward and allows you to take a step forward from the front without increasing your risk of blowing up. Everyone wants to be at their best more often and improve faster. The inchworm concept helps you to get honest and clear about your weak points in an organized way. When you're well prepared, you can guarantee improvement every day. Your capacity for learning, the key to fast improvement, will be at its peak. The cause of variation. As long as you're trading, you'll always have aspects of your performance that represent the peak of your ability and the flip side, your worst. Always. Perfection isn't possible over a large number of trades because the definition of perfection continues to evolve. There are times when your sense of the market is spot on and you make phenomenal decisions, and other times you don't. Trading is a dynamic profession that's constantly becoming more competitive. This means that the definition of perfection, or even solid performance, is a moving target. As long as your performance evolves, that means you're learning. And if you're learning, there will always be a range in the quality of your decision-making. Variation also exists because as humans, we're highly dynamic, and there are a large number of variables that impact us, including whether we got enough sleep, exercised, ate right, felt physically healthy and emotionally stable, etc. Now add to that the complexity of the financial markets. Not only are you continually figuring out how to best play the game, but the game can change at any moment. Each individual area causes variability. The key is to solve for as many of those variables as you possibly can and reduce the amount of variation in your performance. Inchworm forces you to define the different levels of your range and identify the variables that influence your performance in explicit and detailed terms. For example, those traders who take physical health as seriously as other professional performers, such as athletes, can more consistently stabilize their performance. Their inchworm becomes narrower. By identifying causality, you gain control over distinct variables that were previously beyond your scope. This book is intended to do that from an emotional standpoint, narrowing the variation that exists within your emotional ups and downs. For the more statistically minded, I want to point out that the discussion of the bell curve is meant to be illustrative and not perfectly accurate. Depending on your data set, your bell curve could easily be skewed to the right by a higher frequency of peak level decision making, or to the left from a larger sample of poorer decisions. If you're killing it for 6 months in a row, the average would skew right and there would be a flatter tail to the left. But the flip side can be true. When you're in a prolonged slump and performing poorly, the curve would skew left towards your C game. Even though your curve may be skewed, the concept still applies. Define your range with the A to C game analysis. Imagine being given a superpower that allows you to see where exactly the line is between variance and your skill. It's not one that they'd ever make a movie about, but as a trader, it would be pretty valuable. Suddenly, you'd have the ability to always know your real edge. A power like that would take a lot of the uncertainty out of trading and make your confidence much more stable. On days where you got crushed, but upon reflection wouldn't change your decisions, you wouldn't feel as bad as you do normally. On the flip side, on days where you make an insane amount of money, but they resulted from a series of errors you made that happened to work out, you wouldn't feel as good. Obviously, no one has this power. But the idea of having a more objective way of evaluating your skill is appealing, isn't it? When you have a clearer way of knowing how you're trading, in real time and day to day, you can focus less on P&L and more on process and execution. You can tolerate short-term ups and downs a lot better, especially in a drawdown or a rush, and your emotions will be more stable. The A to C game analysis is one of the centerpieces of my system because it delivers those benefits. The tool is straightforward and can use the details you gathered mapping your problems. Essentially, you identify the key descriptions of each level, A game, B game, and C game, and separate your mental game from your tactical skill. Here's a sample to give you an idea of what it looks like. Mental game. C game. Distracted. Risk-averse, hesitating. Forcing trades to overcome hesitance. No patience. Negative self-talk. Self-doubt. Trading P&L. B game. Overthinking. Attention on wrong market. Losing focus. Missing obvious trades, looking at P&L, reacting slower, going against gut. A game, very relaxed, decisive, patient, confident, trusting gut. Tactical skill, C game. Keep chasing price, keep fading directional moves, cutting trades too soon because I want to get paid, don't follow loss limit rules, making impulsive trades because I'm overreacting to one element, scaling without planning for price going against me. B game. Worse understanding of context, correlation, or location. Scalping for a few ticks, but no big trades. Not aware enough to sit out or pick my spots. Cutting trades too soon and not giving it enough room. Too much attention to depth. No good read on volatility. A game. Clear understanding of context of the market as a whole. Clear understanding of correlations with NA, ES, and Dow. Clear understanding of location, price levels, and where we are in the chart. Letting price come to me. Seeing trapped traders. Much like you've done before, take time to think about this before and after a trading session. As you become more aware of information during the session, note it down to add later when you gather up the pieces. For those of you who might find this more difficult, start with what's most obvious. Create a draft, and revise it. You'll know you have a solid, polished first version when you stop seeing any new things for at least 3 trading days. Once this is solid, you can then use it as your measuring stick, both during and at the conclusion of each day. You can also review it as part of your warm-up to remind you of the mental and tactical improvements to make, as well as the signals that your level has dropped. Don't change it within each month. That sample size is too small to properly evaluate the solidness of your improvements. Just take notes on the side and update it in the future when you have sufficient proof that your game has changed. If you want to take this a step further, you can also identify the levels behind your current C game. This tends to be more important tactically, as they reflect the strengths in your knowledge base or decision making that always show up, regardless of how fearful, angry, or tired you are. One of the ways to identify these strengths is by analyzing the solid parts of your game when you reach these points, or whenever you're at your worst. This stabilizes confidence by creating a stop loss, in a sense, for how bad you can get, and makes it easier to see what's still in the learning process. One word of caution is not to use the A to C game analysis as a crutch. While it's an important and helpful evaluation tool, when you completely ignore your results in favor of this new metric, you could use it as an excuse for poor results. Use it, but don't completely disregard your actual real money results. Simply use the A to C game analysis to improve the accuracy of your day-to-day evaluation. When your range is too wide. When completing the A to C game analysis, or just thinking about your range if you haven't done the task yet, you may notice a big gap between your best and your worst. This problem can happen for a number of reasons. The primary one is failing to consistently upgrade your C game. Consistent improvement as a trader has to include a commitment to eliminating your weaknesses. Otherwise, you'll succumb to one of the most common problems I see, a wide range. The solution to that is a narrow range, which is achieved by maintaining a consistent focus on correcting the flaws in your C game. This steady focus is a trait that elite performers in any industry share, including traders. They understand that the power to compete at the highest level comes first from the strength of the weakest part of their game, both technically and mentally. The old adage that a team is only as strong as its weakest link also applies to individuals. It's weak to not know your weak points, and even weaker to not want to know them. Your C game has the power to hold you back, and if you don't work on it consistently, the instability caused by that wide range will ripple through every aspect of your trading. The idea of working on weaknesses is nothing new. There's a plethora of fantastic advice out there about the value of failure and weaknesses, and yet many traders still have a hard time embracing them, especially when emotions are involved. This indicates the presence of a performance flaw. Maybe you don't understand how your strengths and weaknesses are linked, as shown on the bell curve, and you have a one-dimensional play-to-your-strengths mentality. The reality is that no matter how good you are, you always have weaknesses to improve. Even areas of strength have relative weakness. Or perhaps you didn't have a solution to the emotional chaos causing your big mistakes, so it was better to ignore them and focus on what you could improve. Maybe you harbor an old school mentality that it's weak to be weak, so suck it up and stop being a baby. Others are actively trying to work on their weaknesses, but don't realize they're not fully embracing them. Here's a list of often surprising examples that can prove you're ignoring parts of your C game. Working really hard and seeing progress in many ways, but randomly having big blow-up days where it feels like you forgot everything and all of your efforts were wasted. Constantly jumping around looking for the next thing to learn, especially when in a drawdown. Rationalizing bad days by saying, "That's so unlike me," and moving on without much thought about why it happened. Continually coming up with new trading strategies, and with each big insight you think, "Now I found it," implying that from now on you'll be printing money. Being consumed by healthy activities that are believed to be the answer to never showing weakness, such as meditation, exercise, sports, a new diet, etc. Lacking trust in your trading, feeling like you're your own worst enemy. Being unable to stay in the zone for long or even reach it very often. Secretly believing it's possible to always be at your best. Regardless of the flaws causing these problems, if you ignore, avoid, or deny your C game, you're unknowingly sucking the life out of your trading. Continually correcting the flaws in your C game is an essential part of your growth. Inchworm provides a practical way to understand the learning process and the value of embracing weaknesses and mistakes. You'll be able to more clearly focus on the precise reasons these setbacks, failures, or mistakes happen and how to prevent them in the future. With all this talk about weaknesses, I want to make one thing clear. My goal is not to make you accept your weaknesses, feel good about them, and that's it. Since you'll always have them, why not have a constant desire to eliminate the weak points in your trading? It's actually pretty simple when you think about it. Your job is to suck less. The key to moving your inchworm forward is sucking less in key moments when your C game is likely. You must take advantage of these opportunities because it can transform your trading. Those moments are challenging. Emotions often run high, and it's easy to lose sight of the long-term reality. The more you succumb to those mistakes, the better you get at making them. Learning is never neutral. Plus, there's a direct relationship and connection between your peak and the strength of the back end of your inchworm. By sucking less in those moments, you can make it easier to get in the zone. That simple idea of sucking less was significant for Brian, a futures trader from Canada who had been trading full-time for about 5 years. Along with the visual of the inchworm, he was able to solve a majority of his problems with greed and fear almost immediately. That's because his emotional problems weren't deeply rooted. Instead, problems with focus, procrastination, and a lack of structure were the real culprits. Throughout the trading day, Brian was constantly envisioning a future with lots of money, where he was trading from the Caribbean and living an island lifestyle. This dream was a persistent distraction that took away the focus and urgency he needed each day to materialize that vision. He'd skip out on his pre- and post-market routines and avoid watching videos to expand his trading acumen. During the trading day, he'd get distracted and then just walk away and do something unrelated to trading. The emotions came in seemingly random fashion. There would be periods where greed would kick in, Brian would feel on top of the world, and he'd take position sizes that were too big, assuming they would never lose. At other times, he was so fearful of losing or making a mistake, he would only take perfect setups and therefore missed a lot of opportunities. Once he was in a trade, he'd be too focused on P&L rather than price action, and couldn't let the trade play out. He'd either quickly take profit or panic sell once it retraced because he didn't want to lose. Or those missed opportunities would spark FOMO, and he'd try to pick its top or bottom, only to get stopped out for going against momentum. The combination of greed and fear, along with focus problems and procrastination, crippled his ability to trade. He worried about failing, going broke, and embarrassing himself. But as severe as all this sounds, greed and fear were actually a result of the fact that his big aspirations and high expectations lacked a framework and the discipline to achieve his dream. In our first session, the inchworm concept immediately resonated, and Brian realized that he was stalled out because he wasn't actively trying to move forward. "It's really hard to go forward if you're stretched out flat," he noted. That led us to create weekly goals that were achievable, with daily benchmarks to measure progress. This allowed him to break out of the need to make money now and focus instead on a daily process of sucking less. For Brian, the concept of not having to be perfect, to just be 10% less bad, clicked and reduced the severity of his procrastination. Previously, he'd skip his routine entirely if he couldn't do it perfectly. Now, he understands the definition of perfection rises over time and that he needed to suck less to be more perfect. He laid out an approach for the day in the markets that has benefited him significantly. He's taking more trades, has a higher win-loss ratio, and is more profitable. His R factor increased from around 1.25 to 2.25. He's able to stay in trades longer, let them play out, and trust the process. All the things that he knew he needed to do but couldn't. That doesn't mean that he has all the answers now, but he has a framework that explains why he was struggling. And that gives him the direction and stability to make continual progress. Truth be told, the inchworm concept and the corrections I've mentioned here didn't fully correct his discipline problems. He needed to deal with focus and procrastination differently. And I'll pick up his story again in Chapter 8, where I discuss those problems. Like Brian, for your game to grow stronger, you need a bigger and stronger foundation on which to build it. Your C game is the crack in that foundation. Even if you take nothing else from this section, carefully consider the following advice, as it can have a valuable impact on your ability to learn. Avoiding C game mistakes takes some organization and preparation, but even focusing on it for 1 minute a day can create enough momentum to help you suck less. If you're unsure of what to work on in your trading, improving your C game will be the most beneficial and rewarding place to start. It's also the simplest. Learning can be overwhelming, daunting, and complex at times. Knowing you can always focus on the 3 or 4 worst errors you make gives you a reliable and easy starting point. Uncovering what's causing your back-end problems. For many of you, the key to moving the back end of your inchworm forward is correcting the emotional problems that hold your back end in place. But to correct those problems, you must first accurately identify what's causing them. To simplify the way to find the root cause, I developed the following problem-solving process. Originally developed for my poker clients, it's called the mental hand history. I chose the name to encourage poker players to approach the mental game in the same structured and logical way they correct technical mistakes, which involves reviewing hand histories of their play. The mental hand history helps you analyze the information you gathered while mapping your reactions, and it helps to find the faulty patterning at the heart of the issue. For some of you, using this tool will fundamentally rewire how you solve problems. The 5 steps are: Step 1, describe the problem in detail. Step 2, explain why it makes sense that you have this problem or why you think, feel, or react that way. Step 3, explain why the logic in Step 2 is flawed. Step 4, come up with a correction to that flawed logic. Step 5, explain why that correction is correct. Completing these steps can be challenging. With that in mind, I organized the content in the next 5 chapters to make it easier to spot your problems, identify the details that characterize your struggle, and fill out your mental hand history. You can also pull in content, advice, and ideas from other resources. There's a lot of good material out there. It's often just not used in the most effective way. Now that you have a system, fit in whatever you believe will help get the job done. Be sure to write down your answers as you go along. Otherwise, you'll have too much going on in your mind to get deep enough into the flawed logic to come up with a detailed understanding of the problem and solution. You also may need several days and multiple attempts to complete all 5 steps. Writing allows that iterative process to move faster. Here are some instructions and examples to get you started. Below is a simple example of a mental hand history to give you an idea of how it looks. On the surface, the answers may seem obvious, but when you go through the process and complete each step with personalized answers, you develop a deeper understanding of the cause and correction to your problem. Then I'll give you some advice on how to complete each step. I'll show you a more complex example at the end of the section, and you'll see additional examples throughout the book. 1. Describe the problem in detail. I can't accept big losses. 2. Explain why it makes sense that you have this problem, or why you think, feel, or react that way. My strategy is profitable when I follow it. 3. Explain why the logic in step 2 is flawed. By saying that my strategy is profitable, I'm implying that I will never incur big losses, whether or not I perfectly execute my strategy. 4. Come up with a correction to that flawed logic. I must learn how to take a loss, take the punch, embrace the feeling. Losses taken with good execution are part of the deal. 5. Explain why that correction is correct. A profitable strategy will incur losses, sometimes big ones. My edge accounts for that. The bigger problem is allowing a big loss to cost more than it should. Unpacking the steps to complete your mental hand history. The mental hand history is an important tool for resolving the back-end problems that brought you to this book. The following advice will help you better understand how to complete each step and avoid the common missteps traders make when trying to complete it. Step 1. Describe the problem in detail. To begin, write down what you'd say if you were describing the problem in your mental game to me. If you've already been building a detailed map of the problem and the clues surrounding it, use this step to clearly articulate the problem. You may also want to add in some details about the history of the problem, as context can be important for completing the next few steps. For example, if this problem started 6 months ago, after you had a significant life change, like getting divorced or having a child, that would indicate something different versus if being unable to accept big losses had been a problem throughout your professional career. Step 2. Explain why it makes sense that you have this problem or why you think, feel, or react that way. Clients often have trouble with this step, and they think the answer is, I'm just being irrational or illogical. That's another way of saying that you are the problem. But then, is the solution to fix you? What does that even mean? It doesn't make sense. You're not the problem. The flaws, biases, and illusions are the cause of the problem, and this step is critical to nailing down precisely what that is. Mental game problems happen for logical reasons. While that logic is clearly flawed in some way, since it's creating a problem, the cause and effect makes sense when you have the full picture. Once you know the reason, it's a lot easier to know what's wrong with it. This step can be hard. Explaining why there's a gap between what you know is true and how you're reacting can be difficult. Avoid using answers like, I'm stupid, or the market screwed me, because they stop your analysis. Neither you nor the market is the problem. Take some time to capture the logic behind the problem. Your answer is flawed or incomplete, but you still had a reason that made sense on some level. Ask yourself, why do I have this problem? Why does it make sense that I feel this way? Why am I reacting this way? Your answers will get the hamster wheel in your head turning differently. This happens a lot with my clients, and in doing so, they gain access to knowledge they previously ignored because the problem was assumed to be illogical. Lastly, complex problems often have several pieces or layers. If you identify more than one reason while completing this step, follow steps 3 to 5 for each individual reason. Step 3. Explain why the logic in step 2 is flawed. Throughout this book, I have been reiterating that underlying performance flaws are the cause of the emotional reactions. Now you get to identify the flaw. If you try to complete this step without having a good answer in step 2, you're blindly throwing darts at a dartboard. If you've done a good job at articulating your reasons in step 2, finding what's flawed is much easier. But again, don't worry if this seems daunting. The next 5 chapters will help you figure out why the logic or reason you found in step 2 is flawed, incomplete, or inaccurate. Lastly, and this is critical, the biggest mistake clients make in this step is thinking that it's a flaw to feel fear or another emotion. Emotion is never the flaw. Emotion is the signal. Thinking otherwise is like saying a fever is the cause of the flu. Step 4. Come up with a correction to that flawed logic. Now we get to the meat of what's going to help you resolve this problem. Taking into account steps 2 and 3, define a straightforward and logical correction to the flaw that's causing your mental game problem. Sometimes the correction is simply incorporating a concept or idea about trading, like variance, which you already know well but haven't applied in the right way. Err on the side of training these ideas first before getting more complex, because these are important ideas and you need to master them anyway. They may be enough to solve the issues you're facing right now. If they're not enough, you'll get a closer look at what's actually flawed. Step 5. Explain why that correction is correct. This step is a bit of a bonus, but for some traders it can add repetition, clarity, and detail to the new logic, which more firmly roots it in their mind. Here's another example so you can see how all 5 steps work together. 1. Describe the problem in detail. I lose faith in a trading strategy when I'm unsuccessful and jump from one methodology to another before mastering the technique in all market conditions. I think there must be a more consistent, profitable technique and doubt my ability to make the current strategy work for me. 2. Explain why it makes sense that you have this problem or why you think, feel, or react that way. If I'm unsuccessful, I should find a strategy that actually works for me. Life has taught me that there's always a better way. It's just a matter of finding the right one for me. I don't have time to waste on techniques that have proven fallible. 3. Explain why the logic in step 2 is flawed. If I jump from one strategy to another whenever the market changes, or when I'm unwilling to adapt, I will never master a strategy. I will continue to be stuck at the beginning stage and never achieve my goal of trading for a living. 4. Come up with a correction to that flawed logic. A beginner can explore the landscape and test new ideas, but to be a professional, I need to commit to a methodology and learn to adapt it and myself to the changing market. I need to trust the strategy and do everything possible to understand its strengths and weaknesses in all market types. 5. Explain why that correction is correct. When I've found a viable strategy that's well suited for me, continuing to explore other opportunities increases the likelihood that I'll fail. If I commit to the strategy, do the necessary work, and trust in the evidence, I give myself a greater chance at success. Looking at the typical approach to problem solving in comparison to the mental hand history, traders were basically jumping from step 1 to step 4. In this way, you arrive at corrections that sound good in theory, but don't get to the root of the issue. Understanding this process and using it going forward will help you enormously as you work through the rest of this book. Moving the back end forward. I strongly advise that you read at least the beginning sections of the next 5 chapters, which go into detail about the most common mental and emotional problems in trading. That information will help you identify the real problems affecting your trading. Correctly determining them can be difficult. Even seasoned traders often get it wrong at first. I see it all the time. Greed was thought to be the main problem, when it was actually anger. A presumed discipline problem was really overconfidence. Anger seemed to be the obvious issue, but it turned out that fear was the driver. If you're only looking at the surface and not digging down to the roots, you risk getting it wrong. For instance, you can't solely look at the trading mistakes that you make and accurately conclude the emotions or issues behind them. Take a look at this list. Forcing mediocre trade setups. Hesitating on entries. Exiting trades too early. Chasing the market price up and down. Moving a stop too soon. Moving your profit target before it hits. Talking yourself out of a good trade. All of these common trading mistakes can be caused by greed, fear, anger, overconfidence, lack of confidence, or a discipline problem. In and of themselves, they don't tell us anything about the underlying issues that cause these errors in execution. You can't say you exited a trade too early out of fear unless you have cataloged the details that prove it's fear. Anger, a lack of confidence, or discipline could just as easily be the culprit. You simply don't know just by looking at the error. The key is to use your errors in execution as a starting point to begin mapping the surrounding details, thoughts, emotions, actions, triggers, and changes to your perception of the market and decision-making. then match what you find with the descriptions in chapters 4 through 8. That's often the beginning in figuring out the underlying reason that you're compelled to make that trading mistake. There's such a high priority on getting it right, because once you do, as you'll see in chapter 9, you can develop both a day-to-day and real-time strategy to correct it once and for all. The first problem to tackle is greed, and right away you'll learn the truth that greed is not a problem in the way you think it is. Chapter 4, Greed. Greed is a basic part of animal nature. Being against it is like being against breathing or eating. Ben Stein. There's a lot of confusion in the trading world about greed, including how to solve it. The solution isn't just to be less greedy. That's like saying be less ambitious. Here's the truth. What makes solving greed so challenging is that there are actually no flaws unique to this emotion. Instead, you'll find the roots of greed lie in the flaws, biases, and illusions that cause fear, anger, overconfidence, and lack of confidence. Most often, they lie in overconfidence. Overconfidence is that feeling of invincibility, thinking you can turn a trade into a winner, and that you'll make money with ease. Carelessness, a fuck-it mentality, blind faith and being blind to risk. Excess ambition in this way is overconfidence in both your ability to make money and in the way you'll make it. On the flip side, if greed comes from a lack of confidence, you'll feel like nothing is ever good enough, no matter how much you make. Your greedy drive is that constant push for more money, based on the false idea that it will yield lasting satisfaction, pride, or confidence. Or a drawdown triggers questions about your competence, and you get greedy to quickly eviscerate any doubts about your ability to make money. Anger is a common co-conspirator. Revenge trading is epitomized by the intensity that follows a string of unlucky losses, the trades that stop you out by a tick, only to race to your profit target without you. That emotion may seem like greed, but it's anger. You double your next position and it quickly stops you out. Now you're pissed because you know you're making mistakes, and you force another trade trying to make up for it. To a lesser degree, fear can lurk behind greedy impulses. FOMO is the most common problem. You don't want to miss a big move, and you greedily get in too late, just in case the trend continues. There's a panicky feeling that happens when you see other traders making money, and you want to do so as well. You end up chasing price, and justify a worse price because the opportunity still feels right. Aside from FOMO, the fear of loss, mistakes, and failure can all drive actions that appear greedy. While the whole point of trading is to make money, greed actually costs you money. Your unrestrained desire to make more forces you into decisions that in the long term make you less successful. The market punishes your attempts to squeeze out every penny and make the maximum return from every trade. Of course, that's not always the case. Sometimes greed is rewarded with massive winners or perfect exits. But you wouldn't be reading this if you didn't think greed was a problem. There are lots of theories and debates out there about the positive or negative role that greed plays in society at large. That debate is beyond the scope of this book. My focus is simply on improving your execution and performance as a trader. And for many of you, that means curbing the damage that greed does to your profitability. That may seem counterintuitive to the generations who grew up on Gordon Gekko's famous "greed is good" speech in the movie Wall Street. Only we must remember the full quote. Gekko's actual words are, "The point is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed, for lack of a better word, is good. For lack of a better word is the point of distinction. Ambition is the better word." The nature of greed. In trying to understand the nature of greed, it's helpful to look at Merriam-Webster's definition. A selfish and excessive desire for more of something, such as money, than is needed. Since we're discussing this from a performance standpoint and not from a societal one, we can remove the beginning and end of the definition. That leaves the phrase, an excessive desire for more, which perfectly summarizes the problem. Greed is the emotion that indicates the point where your ambition becomes excessive. Ambition is the competitive drive to be great, more successful, or earn more. It's what motivates you to read books like this one to further hone your craft. Ambition is the drive to win, balanced with the understanding that losses are both inevitable and often helpful in reaching higher levels of success. You wouldn't call the ambitions of Michael Jordan greedy, or for that matter, any athlete who strives to win at the highest levels. No, we'd say they have an intense hunger, will, or drive to win. We applaud their relentless effort and outsized dreams. Is that greed? Of course not. Think of yourself like an athlete, and greed becomes simply a performance problem. Greed exists in every competitive arena. While the aspirations of athletes to win wouldn't be characterized as greedy, that doesn't mean they aren't greedy while competing. But as observers, we can't say with certainty which decisions are greedy or not. Intent matters. Consider the athlete who tries to make a big play, like a lineman in football attempting to pick up a fumble and run with it, or a baseball player trying to score from second base on a short single to center field with two outs in the bottom of the ninth of a tied game. Whether or not they're successful, if they assess the risk as usual, then a healthy ambition and drive to win is likely what drove the decision. If, on the other hand, there's a drive to achieve personal glory above the aims of one's team, or a need to prove to the skeptics that they deserve to be classed as a professional, then it's likely some level of greed has affected the decision. The excessiveness that characterizes greed is different for everyone and can't be judged from the outside. There will always be the outliers, those traders who produce massive returns over a long period of time and appear greedy. For them, however, it may not be greed. It just looks that way. You can't know from the outside when someone else has crossed the line from ambition to greed. Remove the comparisons and focus on yourself. Where is that line for you, where ambition turns into greed? You likely already know. It's when you just can't stop yourself. The common advice sounds simple enough. Don't let greed get the best of you. You can't build an account in a single trade. Stick to your trading plan. Be disciplined and patient. But in the heat of the moment, your drive to make money supersedes that logic, and it's difficult to know when and when not to curb that drive. Ultimately, that's not even how you want to be trading, having to constantly be on the lookout for greed and reining in those impulses. Like a thoroughbred in a racehorse, you run faster when you're free to run as fast as you can, not when the jockey is constantly pulling on the reins. In a business where fortunes can be made and lost in a flash, you can't rely on having to quickly decipher if greed has hijacked your decisions. The goal is to correct the underlying flaws, illusions, or biases that turn your ambition into greed. Then you can drive yourself as hard as possible, knowing that you'll automatically make decisions within your strategy, because you know that's how you make the most money long-term. Common signs of greed. When ambition reaches a point where decision-making becomes compromised, that's greed. You start focusing more on the money and your account balance rather than the percentage or price action. You feel like you need to be making money, and so you race into a trade. As it intensifies, your judgment becomes even more clouded. You miss a clear exit point and think about the killing you're about to make, reveling in your own brilliance. Then what happens? You end up making decisions you know are wrong in the long term, but you can't help yourself. You're driven to get the best possible entry and exit, make massive returns, and profit from every single trade. There's an unquenchable thirst for more that's never satisfied. It needs money now, and that intensity blinds you to risk. Greed ignores risks and seeks to earn money without regard for edge, strategy, or system. It emerges in a wide variety of situations. There's a blind optimism that things are bound to go your way and keep going up forever. Or you fantasize about some high P&L number that you want to make from a trade, set your target too high, and imagine what you'll do with the profit. You're not assessing the whole situation and determining if it's worth the risk. You're only focused on money and can't see how you'll lose. You get over-leveraged, oversized, add to winners, open too many positions, and think you can outsmart the market. You don't sell. Let winners run is what you're supposed to do, so you move your profit target, thinking you can turn it into a home run. Or maybe you sold, but immediately get back in because it could be a monster, and you'll kick yourself if you were on the sidelines. For some traders, greed only kicks in during a drawdown or after a string of break-even trades. You feel like you have to make money right now. Money is all you're focused on. You see other traders taking trades and making money. Forget that there will be more opportunities that fit your style, and greedily go after everything you can. But you get stopped out again and immediately re-enter at twice the size. Maybe you get a little lucky and you're back in the green. Now you want more and try to squeeze out every cent and hope it doesn't retrace. Some of the specific signs of greed may also include bragging about winners, talking about how much you're up in your positions, and making it seem like you have it all figured out. Building positions that are too large or too concentrated, thinking you can't lose. Shortcutting your usual process to race into a trade because you see others piling in. Feeling like you have to be making money all the time, always wanting more, never feeling satisfied, and yet at times avoiding the hard work and discipline required to do it the right way. Now that you have some ideas of the signs of greed to look out for, you're ready to map your pattern. Mapping your greed. In those moments when you cross the line and make decisions that are counter to what you know is correct, you're not making a conscious choice. Greed is taking control, and you're compelled to take the trade, stay in it, add to it, take on more leverage, or squeeze out every tick. Emotions are powerful, especially greed. And to have a chance at correcting them, you need to map the signals that indicate an escalation. The following steps will help you create an actual document that will become your map of greed. Step 1. Over the next few weeks, pay close attention to your pattern of greed. Examine and capture the signs that greed has become a problem, including thoughts, emotions, things you say out loud, behaviors, actions, changes to your decision-making, changes to your perception of the market, opportunities, or current positions, trading mistakes. Also be sure to spot the things that trigger greed, such as winning, a string of losses, or sensing a monster opportunity. Keep a document open on your computer or a notepad next to you while you trade, and take notes throughout the day. At the end of the trading day, review what you found and add additional details. Be as comprehensive as you can. When you first take notes, there's a lot of brainstorming. You're not going to identify all the details perfectly the first time you do it. If this is really hard for you at the beginning, don't worry. Everyone has their own starting point. Use what you find and build on it over time. If it takes you 3 months to get it right, so what? As long as you keep working and thinking about it, you'll learn more and get closer to a complete picture. Here are some questions to help you get started. What situations typically cause you to become greedy? How does your body react? For example, are you jacked up, ready to fight, or hyper-focused? Can you describe the point where ambition becomes excessive and turns into greed? What specifically is going through your mind? What thoughts do you have? How is your decision-making process different? What is the earliest sign that greed has become a problem? Mapping greed is an iterative process. When you spot new details, even just slight adjustments, be sure to add them. Small details matter and can make the difference between making progress or not. Step 2. Now you're going to organize your notes into a chart that assigns a level of increasing severity using a scale from 1 to 10 to each observation you've made. For instance, ranking something a 1 would characterize a slight urge to force results, while ranking something a 10 would indicate unrestrained greed. At each level, identify details that clearly distinguish it from the other levels. As you assign levels of severity, split them into two categories, the mental and emotional side of greed and the technical side. They sit side by side. So for example, level 1 on the mental and emotional side corresponds to level 1 on the technical side, and so on. Be sure to base this on your personal experience of greed. Everyone has their own range, and if you judge yourself against another trader, you're at risk of over or underestimating the severity, which will make your strategy less effective. You also don't need to have details for all 10 levels. Most traders I work with aren't able to distinguish their pattern to that degree. Complete as many as you can, making sure you complete a minimum of 3. Here are some questions to distinguish the differences in each level of greed. What triggers the initial urge to force profits at level 1? How does it then increase or accumulate to reach higher levels? For example, after closing your second winning trade of the day, you start thinking about having a career day and ignore your strategy. As a result, you move your profit target on an existing position. When it pays off, you start blindly entering trades, assuming you'll win. What are the signs that greed is small and still manageable? What are the signs that greed has become uncontrolled, completely disrupting your execution? How is your perception of the market, opportunities, or current positions different when your greed level is higher? How does your decision-making process differ at level 1 compared to levels 5 and 10? Then take the details you've categorized and put them into a map like this. Greed level. Describe the thoughts, emotions, things you say, behaviors, and actions that highlight each level of greed. Complete at least 3 levels. 1. Start thinking about the utility of money, wanting to lock up the gain. I want to have that big trade to secure the profit and achieve better returns to see progress. 5. Wonder if I should move my profit target. Really close, I could secure it now, but I could move the target farther away. If I push the trade farther, I'll be secure for longer. 6. Wonder if I should trail my stop. I don't want to give anything back. More irritated with people when they ask about my trading. 8. I give up my trading plan, but maintain a clear stop and profit target so it's still safe. Much more personal. Is the market with me or against? 10. I want to make the absolute best return right now. Give up all control, and I'm only focused on making money right now. No longer-term thinking. Technical level. Describe the quality of your decision-making, perception of the market, opportunities, or current positions at each level of greed. 1. No change. 5. Start feeling emotions in terms of my trading plan. There's an urge to change things. 8. Don't have a plan. It's all based on how I feel the market is moving. Move stop and profit targets. Perception is more about money. 10. Manually manage the trade. Looking at every single minute to get the best price by looking at every single change in the market. Looking at every 5 or 10 minute candle versus 1 to 4 hour candle. Trades usually last from 1 day to 2 weeks. Some of you will assume this step is impossible because your signs of greed are all extreme. The small signs are there, you just can't see them yet. This is an iterative process. Continue to work the process by paying close attention to the buildup. Remember, one of the best times to do this is after an instance where greed got the better of you. Be a detective. Look at why it reached that point and the signs you could detect next time. Once complete, you have a solid draft that you can use while you're trading to recognize your pattern and quickly respond with the correction. Since these patterns can take a lot of experience and training to correct, don't revise your map until you get consistent evidence that it has permanently changed. The real cause of greed. You may be able to determine some of what's driving you, greed or other emotions, when you do your mapping exercise. But to really assess greed, you need to know what's driving the decision, and that's up to you to determine. What might be a greedy trade for one trader could instead be a well-executed one for another. The key is to clarify what flaws lie below the surface of what you perceive to be greed. To help make this point, let's look at 4 stories of traders who each identified prior to coaching that they had a problem with greed. And in each situation, the flaws associated with fear, anger, overconfidence, and a lack of confidence proved instead to be the main drivers. First up is Alex, a 16-year trading veteran from Germany. He worked for years in a big firm as a market maker for power and natural gas options. Currently, he works for an oil trading group, and he's mainly responsible for their algorithmic options trading. He also trades a personal account on the side, which is the main reason he came to me for coaching. For Alex, greed showed up in a specific way. He felt that he wasn't making enough money on his winning trades. He'd catch himself fantasizing about some high P&L number that he wanted to make, and he was often filled with regret for getting out too early or being talked out of trades that would have made him a ton. At first glance, Alex's example of greed is minor in comparison to the other stories you're about to read. However, his story is important to highlight because even small instances of mental game problems coded as greed need to be corrected. As you'll read in the continuation of Alex's story in the next chapter, greed was signaling a fear of being wrong that caused him to legitimately underperform in a big way. He had good reason to think about those high P&L numbers, as he was missing out on a lot of potential profits. Roderick, on the other hand, a trader from the U.S. with a decade of experience trading all the global CME products, U.S. stocks, and Forex, had a much more visible version of greed. He's an incredibly hard worker who would react very poorly to a loss or mistake. Immediately, he would force trades, trying to make more than the market was giving him. He would try to recover, but spiral out of control, ultimately losing a lot of money on the day. Conversely, on the days where he made money easily, he would want to make even more. No amount was enough. When greed showed up for Roderick, he would attempt to earn without proper edge or system. He knew this, and initially assumed that worrying about money for life and bills was the problem. He tried putting away all the money that he needed for an entire year to take care of himself and his family, but that didn't change a thing. Perhaps it's a gap in knowledge, he speculated. That idea drove him deeper into the markets, trying to gain more and more knowledge, and yet no matter how much more he learned, his greedy attempts to make money continued. As we began our work, it became quickly apparent that what Roderick thought was greed was actually anger. He hated to make mistakes, and in his mind, losing was a mistake. He expected to make money on every trade, to trade better, and make more money, and to never miss an opportunity. Failing to meet any of these expectations meant that he wasn't perfect, which triggered an explosion of anger. In Chapter 6, I'll continue Roderick's story, and you'll see how he was able to fix his unrealistic expectations of perfection. Next is Max, a Forex trader from France. He began trading 5 years ago to prove to his friend that he could do it, and became hooked. For the last 2 years, he's been able to sustain a full-time income, and eventually wants to get investor funding. To get there, however, he first needs to get control of his emotions, namely greed. On the surface, Max is happy with his progress, but there's a hidden urge that he constantly fights against. For example, when price is in a great zone, even though he knows to wait for the right entry, the idea that he could make so much money that it could change his month causes him to jump in so as not to miss it. He also wants to make money because it gives him a good feeling, like he's making progress and knows what he's doing. For Max, greed gets worse after a string of break-even or losing trades. He wants to make the absolute best return right now, and he loses sight of the long-term strategy or value of having made a plan. He can't wait, and will eagerly take a marginal trade. Between our first and second sessions, Max worked incredibly hard to map his pattern of greed and was able to distinguish 10 levels. The sample map from the previous section was a draft that he put together prior to our first session. Here's the second version. Greed level, second version. 1. Logging into my brokerage account to have a brief look at the P&L I'm currently running in a trade. Feeling good if it's positive, but not negatively impacted if it's a loss. 2. Start thinking about the utility of money, wanting to lock up the gain. I want to have that big trade to secure the profit and have better returns to see progress. 3. Thinking about how much more percent or dollar return I need to cover expenses this month and next month. I feel excited about these trades, and I think this is great. I'm back on the ball. 4. Wonder what other people will think of my trade. Other traders, family, investors. I'm happy to talk in depth about my position with others instead of being brief and humble. I want to share and be a show-off about it. 5. Wonder if I should move my profit target. Really close, I could secure it now, but I could move the target farther away. If I push the trade further, I'll be secure for longer. 6. Wonder if I should trail my stop. I don't want to give anything back. More irritated with people when they ask about my trading. I stay in front of the computer, even if I don't need to monitor how the market is moving. 7. I don't want to lose or give back money to the market, so I keep thinking nonstop about my trade. I'm hunched over, looking at my screen, and don't do a lot more than stare at live charts. I can't get myself away from them. 8. Trading feels much more personal, like the market is with me or against me. I give up my trading plan but maintain a clear stop and profit target, so it's still safe. 9. I think the market is controllable. I think I can understand the flow of the market. Whenever it goes higher or lower, I can predict it. Staring at my screen, snapping at people as soon as someone talks to me. 10. I want to make the absolute best return right now. Give up all control, and I'm only focused on making money right now. No longer-term thinking. In Max's original map, the first signal of greed was thinking about the utility of money. But now that's at level 2, and the first clue is looking at the P&L of an active trade. This is important, because it enables him to correct greed sooner while the scale is small. Looking at the deeper emotions fueling his greed, you'll notice the two sentences in bold provide the clues. Greed is fueled by a weakness in confidence. Max has reasonable aspirations, but the deep urgency to prove himself causes him to make decisions outside of his strategy. In Chapter 7, we'll pick up his story and show how he was able to eliminate greed and make significant progress with his confidence. Let's look at another trader. When I first met Chris, who was from the US, he had been trading full-time for about 7 years. He typically day trades stocks and US index futures and swing trades Forex and options. For Chris, greed compelled him to ignore pre-planned targets and try to hit a home run. More often than not, it hurt him. But he couldn't help it. The threat of regret carried a lot of weight and forced him to push too hard to avoid missing out on what could be a home run. The roots of his greed were planted before he became a full-time trader, when Chris sold way too soon out of a stock that he had planned to hold. Within a month of selling, the company was acquired, and the gains would have been life-changing. A decade had passed, and yet the pain was still fresh. As we analyze why,